I'm new here. I just moved to Cork City 1 week ago.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. I've moved around quite a lot in the past decade, and there's very little continuity in my life. But at least when people get together to read poetry, it's pretty much the same in every country. So I'm very grateful to have found this place. Okay, so I'm gonna read a story about lost love in three parts. Science fiction after Katie Miller. Scary science fiction scenarios depicting human consciousness as copyable and incarcerable by a mad programmer into an eternal digital hell. Don't scare me now that you're around. Since you're so tangibly around my existence that I'm forced to rethink the definition of the self. Scary science fiction scenarios depicting human consciousness as copyable and incarcerable by a mad programmer into an eternal digital hell just make me smile at their extremely reductionist view of the mind. Since no mad programmer could write into code the way ours, along with our bodies, mingle and merge, could not reproduce this feeling of halfness, the lack of you when I am on the eye. But with you, I expand into you and the world, and I'm so much more than this body, this heart, this neurological activity, and already exist eternally in traces, in places we frequent, spatially and temporally beyond this century's digital innovations and binary code, beyond words and numbers, infinite. Okay, and this one's called Memory. If I could paint, I would paint a picture of your sleeping face from memory. Recreate with caresses your brows, eyelashes, parted lips, unshaven chin. If I could dance, I'd have danced you to the end of love and back in slow swing to the best of Leonard Cohen. I'd have danced through the nights. If I could sing, I'd have sung ballads of my love for you under the stars. I'd be at your doorstep with a guitar and not leave till you call the guards. If I could drive, I'd have driven you to the west coast for a romantic getaway. I'd have driven you home so you could have in turn got drunk on dinner wine. If I could talk, I'd have talked through all the things that came between us. I'd have told you all my secrets, and in confidence the secrets of everyone else. But I didn't. I can only write mediocre poetry no one may ever read, and hope that a trace of my memory, of your sleeping face, remains immortally in these redundant shapes made of ink on paper. And this one's called Spring. Winter came late. Mornings were sunny and frostless. Birds didn't know when to leave. January arrived with arctic blasts and geese finally ascended in broken triangles. I found terrific solace visualizing various futures in abstract sets of images. These pictures became recurring dreams which nightly increased in vividness. There was comfort in old songs that brought back memories of lost loves. I made a habit of telling people who were also lonely and cold that spring was just round the corner and to have faith in better times. It is easy to believe the rejuvenating power of the changing of seasons from the comfort of hibernation, willfully ignorant of the pressures that come with daylight, rebirth, and the cyclical currents of becoming.
And welcome to Cork. Next up, we have Sandra Beasley.
It seems so appropriate that someone new to town would be reading at, and then I get to follow them. I'm getting on a plane on Thursday after 3 months in Cork. I'm returning to Washington, D.C.
Oh.
I know, but I'm immediately conspiring on how to come back. And I promise that if I find a way to come back, I'll be sure that it includes a Monday. So I look forward to seeing you all again, and I hope for another long stretch. But so I thought I would read a poem of travel from the manuscript I'm working on now that I've worked on here. Two reference points, one of which will be familiar to you maybe, which is the story of Odysseus, particularly his engagement with Polyphemus, the Cyclops, and the ways in which Cyclops attacked his men, and the ways in which Odysseus got his revenge. That one you might, that reference point you'll know, but the other is a very South America, not South America, the American South reference, which is boiled peanuts. Does anybody eat boiled peanuts in other?
Yeah.
So in Virginia, Florida, etc., we boil peanuts in the shell in a spiced water for a long time, and it softens them and heats them, and it gets to a point where you push in both ends of the shell, and it just pops open like a clam shell, and the warm peanuts tumble out.
Oh.
So it's a way that we eat them as a roadside stand food. It's ridiculously messy. It's just the absolutely the least attractive food to eat ever, and it's delicious. So if you can just imagine buying a whole bag of these warm, softened peanuts in the shell and just popping them one by one into your mouth, and if you're driving, tossing the shells out the window. If you hear an echo of C.P. Kabaki's Ithaca, going back to that Odysseus reference, that's intentional. The epigraph is, after C.P. Kabaki's Ithaca, epic, as I set out for home, back home to my apartment, to my vengeful cat, back home to a betrothed who never was one for the textile arts, I hope the voyage is a long one. I hope that Homer finds me on my great journey on a bar stool in Ocala, Florida, one March Sunday at noon. Though it occurs to me, after I am served the bowl of boiled peanuts, that my hunger in this moment is not heroic. One by one, I shell those soft bodies warm against my bottom teeth, tipping their meat into my mouth. Did they too once have names? Did they too once have sons? How silly their bodies look in their little boat with its checkered placemat sail. I take a swig of a Bloody Mary spiked with ocean and jalapeno, the one eye of my forehead pulsing. I will get back into the car. I will drive another 800 miles with Aeolus's bagged breath stashed in my glove compartment. And if I find home poor, home won't have fooled me. I, who have forged a life that consists of leaving my life. I'll recall how I once sat at a bar, wiping Cajun broth from my chin with a 12th cocktail napkin. Blame nobody, I sing. Nobody, nobody, nobody did this to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sandra. Next up, we have Sue Bloom.
Right, thanks for that. So I have two poems, and the first one is very dark, and I'd say it's about a type of bullying situation that I experienced last year. It's called the stoning. Like being stoned with words, tumbling rocks pounding down at me, one by one, from each member under the watchful eyes of the supervisors, unimpeded, guided, praised, just what I deserve. Curling inwards, in on myself, I sink into the ground, where it is warmer, softer, and no pain. Thrust back in time, here again, facing the dark, I am gone. So the next one is a poem I wrote to the wine, which is very rare for me to write anything like that. So here we go. Poison. Your flavor sparkles dry across my tongue. Acerbity stringing taste buds. Your sharpness of fire parching the throat. My lips tightening as the astringent liquid trickles down in a crisp, clean zest. Not 10 minutes of tangy tannins and the brain goes soggy. Mind soft and languid, thoughts tipsy and wild, frazzled and uncontrolled, rolling through the brain folds, a dizzy spin twirling any clarity of mind. The faint notes of your flower, your poison pearls light bodied across my palate, the spice of your grape adding acidity to my sweetness. The breath heating under your influence as my boundaries fall and my lips open for a smile. You got me, spinning, twirling in a swirling embrace. Poison.
We can make this easier on you. Lie while your lips are moving. All the time there is a pressure existence in the coffee cup. Call upon to break silence. Broken conversation. The hint of the tea drops, passing worse. Under control, not enough to quell the beast. The accompanying cakes over precious reckoning. The threatening show hits the nerves. Needing an odd opinion if you ask for it. Head rushing and sinking, striking a pose. The most important there is, under candlelight. A twin icons and smirking loss in the world. Overqualified for admission, sick unto God. Marginally following the rest of the world. The ceremony, a feast inside a foes, blows away. Staying awake a chore as soon as begotten. Endless packets of coffee bleeding through. Pay attention to detail, or at least the truce. Between disease and the normal, getting up at the prescribed time, hurtling to a truth. Class is an utter control your understanding. Prepackaged control, not in the nations. Destined habits marked forever, however attenuated. Afraid I will always feel for it, deserve it. Thank you.
Next up is Jerry Murphy.
How many lines will you have for us tonight? How many do you want?
In first collection or second collection?
Yeah, there is
Minotaur,
I don't
Minotaur.
Know.
No, the Minotaur, the...
Oh, yeah.
And it's just coincidental. It's just something that didn't happen to me on the way to work, but I kind of imagined it could have. Myth. I'm on my way to work, the graveyard shift, 4:30 in the morning, opening the pool for the undead. Halfway through my panting trudge up Gardner's Hill, I come upon the Minotaur. He's checking himself in the wing mirror of a silver Audi 350 and snorting with satisfaction. A tedious adventure, never happened, he replies. We came to an arrangement, he showed me out of the labyrinth, then boasted to all and sundry that after a brief tussle, he had stabbed me to the throat, upon which I had disappeared in a pall of black smoke. Suited me down to the ground, heated the place with a passion. So I've been roaming the world ever since, making the occasional appearance like now, just to keep the myth alive, so to speak. And you, he asks. Paris archives. And it's true, actually, funnily enough. Spring 1943. She sits outside a small sunlit cafe just off the Champs-Élysées, elegant, fragrant, radiant. Coco Chanel waiting patiently for a Nazi officer lunch date.
Thank you, Jerry. Next up is Philip Spillane.
So a lot of you know I write my own mythology. Not kind of convenient to came up right now. So for the last few years I've been writing unintentionally adding to the moth mythology. The world was the moths were the first ever creatures and so were the bats and swore not crazy. And it's gonna sound more crazier, but the god of humans, the god of light bulbs and such, I'm speaking as him right now. So I was going to read, it's like a work in progress, but I'm going to read this part out first and then I'm going to read the actual poem, but this is like a...
Preamble.
Yeah, it's like rough work. Yeah, preamble is a technical word. I don't know what that means, it sounds a word.
It's a foreword.
It's a foreword. Oh yes, you can say that too. I am Loom, creator of the false moon and the sun. I invented the first light bulb that swooned the moths out of their orbital searches for moons. I heal the scars in the sky left by the industrial aids. They still show scarlet in dawn and set. Today, I washed out on this shore, draped in lilacs, folded and masked in war red. It's rough work. Now, I did not invent any of these poems. I am only a channeler. Bats wrote them. I just know how to find them. Like you write your life on pages, bats record poetry in the winds, cup sounds delicately in pockets of air, echoes enveloped up and bounce into themselves, so much they can last forever. I can reach out and find them, mostly by luck. So now, I pendulum my arm out, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, tasting what's out there, feeling the ingredients mix into the air in my space. And this is what I found now. Moths and bats harmonize their orbits, translate their trajectories to understand each other. It was a racial time, an unequal time, an unstable time. Mott said they were fossils from the sky. Bat said they still believed we came from a distant echo. It doesn't have to be which is the moon or which is the earth. They can share this sun. It was put there for all of us. This is hard, but we keep evolving. I dream this. I breathe this. It's not my poem, but a history, folded in and translated through my imagination. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. Our final reader of the night is Jim Krikard.
I wasn't going to read this because I just kind of scribbled it down today, but when I heard Sandra talk about her vicious cat, vengeful cat.
Also vicious.
Vicious. Yeah. I thought I'd read it. I just moved into my friend's house and she has this like white cat and it's like...
stunningly beautiful.
Stunning. It's like a forest, Norwegian forest cat, and it's white completely and long beautiful hair and stuff, but she's got like...
She's a psychotic
feisty. Yeah.
She's a queen.
Her name is Ziggy from Sigmund.
Yes.
Sigmund Freud.
Sigmund Freud. So I'll just read it. Madame was still savouring the taste of her evening meal. Relaxing in white fur as Notre Dame was caving in with flames. The loss of architect architecture captured less interest than a fallen filter tip laying on the floor, waiting for her to play with its plastic sleeve. I watched the jade denizens of her eyes turn toward the sky in search of a bird or something more interesting. Later that evening, I saw her enraptured by the hummingbird sipping a tubular flower, her attention on the flapping wings. I think she liked the sound of David Attenborough's voice describing the colourful bird like a sensuous advert. Startled by a stampede of wildebeest, she became annoyed at the crash of beasts thwarting her flying snack. And then clouds edged into her vision as monsoon season arrived. When we turned off the TV, I watched her pounce soundlessly off the scratched leather seat and climb behind the screen in search of the hummingbird.
Thank you, Jim. And nice trainers as well. And you noticed as you were standing beside you. This is the first time I noticed. I think it was because I was sitting behind you, kind of a sort of looking at shoe level. You have really nice shoes as well, Paul.
Yeah,
I noticed a few pairs of shoes.
Yeah.
Like,
all this is not
unique for you.
The
sun isn't here today.
You all have nice shoes. This has been a Avail. A big round of applause for yourselves.
Woo!
And a big round of applause for our guest poet, Majella Kidd.